Okay. You can manage, I think.
All right. So from Switzerland, Davide Rodogno, Thomas David, and Yitang Lin. Davide is at the Graduate Institute and is head of the history.
Yes.
Head of the history.
You skip that.
Yitang is a graduate.
Finishing.
PhD student.
At the University of Lausanne and the center, interdisciplinary center for international.
The Institute of Political, Historical, and International Studies.
Thank you.
I think it's it just changed. No, I have to. So, in their introductory remarks to the workshop, the organizer referred to, and I quoting them, histories of the development of international public health in the 20th century that tend to be celebration of achievements, whether the enrolling of an ever-widening number of nations in programs to improve health and prevent disease, the adoption of shared standards and measurement to track health status, or the circulation of health researchers and statements across national frontiers. End of the quote. So as far as we are concerned, fellows and fellowship program participate to that movement, even if our stand is, of course, more critical and we stay away from celebration or achievements. Nevertheless, Rockefeller Foundation Fellows are actors of a movement whose objective was precisely intended to improve health and prevent disease. It aimed at homogenizing practice through standardization and common regulation thanks to the circulation of health research. And this quote from the annual report of the Rockefeller Fellow is a good illustration of the politics of the foundation related to the fellowship. You can see that the first sentence, the award of fellowship on an international basis constitute in the foundation the most important single device for the training of competent personnel for future leadership. And after they are saying that, you know, some of these fellows indeed have gained outstanding recognition, such the award of the Nobel Prize. So it's the reason why Rockefeller Fellows constitute a wonderful case in order to understand the history of the development of international public health during the 20th century, or related to this conference, to understand the trajectory of insiders of global public health. However, the organizers urge us to think about the outsiders, the persons relegated to the background of international public health. And as you will see, this workshop led us to reconceptualize in a new way the role of fellows. And we really thank you, the organizer, to give us the opportunity, you know, to broaden our understanding of what are fellows and fellowship programs. Our presentation will have three parts. In the first one, we will present a database on the Rockefeller Fellows, which will be the starting point of our next research project. In the second part, we will come back to the theoretical and methodological implication for research of the outsider concept. And in the third part, we will illustrate our thoughts with the case of fellows in Taiwan in the aftermath of World War II. So the first part is the presentation of database, which is really illustrating the insiders of global health during the period from 19 up to 1972. I see that Yitang is looking at me, so it means that I'm speaking too much, so I'm going to to go very fast. So, is it true?
So,
this is this project. So, we merge two databases. The first one is based on the directory of 1972. You all know that, you know, the Rockefeller Foundation published a directory including all, or they pretend to include all the fellows between 1919 and 1972. And so for this directory, we use scanning with optical character recognition in order to create this database. we merged with a second database, which was the Fellows in Social Science, collected by somebody you all know, Ludovic Tournes, who is part of this project. And he used different sources, among them the Rockefeller Archives, and found almost 1,000 fellows. So what is interesting, I will not develop here, it appears that more than 10% of the fellows were not in the directory database, which opened us something new. And so at the end, we have, you know, a database. The merging of this database means that we have almost 11,000 persons. So what is in this database, except, you know, just names and so on? So we have information on, this is the structure, information on persons, you know, the names, the gender, nationality. Perhaps just one thing concerning the name. For the names that were not written in Latin alphabet, we will have a possibility to use the original names for searching. And so this is thanks to Yitang. It could be very interesting for Chinese names, you know, that to have a translation and so on, because we discover, thanks to Yitang, that it's very difficult to sometimes understand who is who among Chinese fellows. The other structure is information on the education before the fellowship. Next one is the fellowship designation, so the division of the Rockefeller, the categories of grant, the field and subfields of the fellowship. And as Jessica said, there are very clear hierarchy within these fields, within the Rockefeller, and the career before, and we hope sometimes after this person get the fellowship. And so you see that there are links in between these different fields, and here is the steps, you know, housing, institution, and so on. It's very abstract. We just want to give one example. The favorite of Yitang is Yves Biro. Yeah, you know she's joking, because every time, and I know that some of you know him very well and so on, so it's, you know, it's not a bad choice. So here is a picture of him from the, and here, so you can see, it's too fast for me, you know, in French I can do it very well, but you can see here very well the information on him. Here is all the first category on names, here is, sorry, the question of the fellowships, here is his career, and steps of the fellowships. So for all the 11,000 persons, we have such kind of information. So it's very interesting and very nice to find. And now, so for the moment, it's the actual state of the database, and we plan now to do the following development. The first is a glossary of organizations and institutions, because they are coming from very different, and it would be very interesting to have a glossary. And the second point will be, you know, geolocalization, thanks to geographic information system. So it's not just a tool, you know, but for us it's really related to research questions. And one of these research questions is to see education affiliation, if the fellows belongs to what we could call regional epistemological communities. And we think that it's very interesting, and perhaps you remember, it's related to the project of the Rockefeller, because if we come back to the... Here, this is the map, and it was important, so it's to come back to the... And now I'm stopping, because... Okay, here. And now I'm stopping because I'm running out of time, but there are other development we could do, and I give the floor to Davide, because for the moment we speak mostly on insiders, this database, and now we are trying to see how outsiders can come.
Thank you very much, Thomas. And before I start my part, I just wanted to add something that I was discussing with you, Susan, just before we started. Of course, one of the things that we've been talking about is also who was doing the job on the spot, who were the Rockefeller Foundation men on the spot. And this is also part of the project. It's not visible yet, but of course, this, in terms of reflecting on inclusions and exclusions, insiders and outsiders, is certainly part of the kind of files that we are very interested in having a look at. So let's go back to something else, and I would like to develop on insiders and outsiders. So the Rockefeller Foundation's fellow incarnates the crucible and vector of a specific internationalist vision based upon the consolidation and cooperation among nation states. The Rockefeller Foundation Fellow in Public Health, as in other realms, was somebody who was supposed to build, reinforce, and improve public administration in his or her original home country, thanks to the experience gathered somewhere else. And as Thomas said, the workshop gave us a wonderful opportunity to problematize and conceptualize the role of fellows. So we wish to start with an assumption, a quite trivial one. Fellows were insiders or outsiders with respect to somebody else, whether this was an individual or an institution. And secondly, we would like to share with you the following scheme, which is just on my back. So when we started reflecting on this paper, and for a very short time, we thought in binary terms, and we toyed with the idea of insiders-outsiders being mutually exclusive categories. But we rapidly came to the conclusion that this was, as far as we are concerned, a simplistic and inaccurate way of conceptualizing the issue. And by the way, documents we came across proved that this kind of binary thinking was wrong. So we came up with the idea of a single individual, a fellow, being more than only an insider or just an outsider. The fellow could be, even if this is not a systematic condition, an insider and an outsider. And this brought us to add a further dimension, a spatial one, which you can see in the scheme. So we included the local, the national, and the international. And of course, there is a third dimension that you cannot see in the scheme behind me, which is a temporal dimension, which should be added to this scheme. And so there were conditions that change over time, and this is something that is reflected in the database. Allow me to give you a simple example of what I mean. So some of the fellows that we came across, and Lyon is very familiar with the example that I'm about to make, were Chinese doctors trained in China at the Peking Union Medical College, which was a quite sui generis institution, which awarded fellowships to go to the USA. If we have a look at our scheme here, we will find that these individuals were outsiders of a certain kind because they were often selected since they were part of an elite in public health or medical experts, and they were trained in already working in a very sui generis, as I said, institution, the PUMC, the Peking Union Medical College. But they were also outsiders in the USA, certainly with respect to the US academic system or in the university programs they were enrolled in. And third, they were insiders, at least from the point of view of the Rockefeller Foundation, especially at the end of their training, when they were supposed to join hospitals or other branches of the Chinese public sector, and they were also insiders, and more than that, they were supposed to spearhead change, modernization, and new health practices in China. And finally, when they were back in China after the fellowship, they were also outsiders of some sort, since they were somewhat different with respect to all the other colleagues that had not gone to the USA. And so in many respects, there are borderlines. So we would situate somewhere here, and it's very, very hard to see. And this way of problematizing insiders and outsiders is very different from your case, Jessica, when you refer to UNRWA, I think. And these examples bring us to a third point, that we do see insiders, outsiders, as a very useful analytical tool, and as well as a construction that helps us reflecting on social mobility and on factor situations that fostered or hampered the change from insider to outsider and vice versa. And of course, there is yet another layer of our research that has to be at least mentioned, and this is particularly hard for us. What did fellow felt like? Did they feel like insiders or outsiders? What was their awareness of being cogs of a bigger local, national, and international engrenage? And unless we find documents, and we have found some documents that shed some light on this part of the story, our interpretation will be indirect, and our analysis will be, so to say, by ricochet. which is through the mediate voices and documents of institutions like the Rockefeller Foundations. And of course, this issue can be mitigated thanks to the presence of Yitang, who can work on Chinese institutions' archives and other local archives. We fully agree with the conveners of the workshop when they say that the repeated sounding of trumpets may have relegated to the background outsiders in the international health arena. If we assume fellows to be the willing executioners of the Rockefeller Foundation, we would consider them as the perfect example of indoctrinated, Americanized experts that Leon was referring to, as the longer manners of an institution with global ambitions, and in other words, we would strip them of any kind of agency. Now, if on one hand we do not wish to overstate the role of fellows, we would like to take some dust off them and to bring them off the shadow into the light. Therefore, just like the conveners of the workshop, we do wonder how the history of international public health will change when we will start factoring in this conspicuous, in our case, group of outsiders. One thing is for sure, we do not question the assumption that fellow were merely outsiders, and we do not want to take any possibility of discussing their loyalty, the voices, and also their contestation. Moreover, shedding a light on fellows contributed to take away some of the fluffiness and vagueness of a certain kind of global history. Perhaps we are just proposing a more classic, but probably sounder historical approach, and in so doing, we hope we explore the international system of public health, its rule, written and unwritten, its reach and its commitment to inclusiveness. And here again, I quote the blurb of the workshop. In the way we approach our research, Rockefeller Foundation fellows are supposed to tell us more about the functioning of different international systems, about their continuities and ruptures. And certainly the issue of center and periphery is at the core of what we try and do. Let me conclude my part distinguishing or entering into the case of China. And here I think that we learned a lot from Lyon, and what we're about to say follows what he just told us on the case of China. First, our work in the archives of international organizations and philanthropic foundations has led us to question the idea of a monolithic category of international fellowships or fellowship programs. Since the very beginning of the 20th century, as far as fellowships in medical sciences and public health were concerned, the institutions that set up and run these programs distinguished their own purposes, categories of fellows, and expectations. We came up with an initial categorization of fellows, which is supposed to address some of the core questions of this workshop. Now, the first category that we easily recognized is international fellowship programs. And so the kind of doctors of the Peking Union Medical College are the typical example of this category. But what we found out, and we go back to the point and my Gan vision for China for sure, is a second category of fellowship programs administered by international organizations, but that operated at the national level. So China and Chinese doctors in China, people that never left China. And these are an awful lot of fellows. And there is a third kind of programs or category of fellows, and these are public health officers. These are yet another category, which is very different from the first one. And this is also something that we would like to develop in our research. And if I may add another point before turning the floor to Yitang, it's that this idea that was set up initially by the Rockefeller Foundation is then taken up by UNRWA from 1943 to 1947, and after 47 by the WHO. So the origin is clearly, at least as far as we can say, a Rockefeller Foundation kind of origin. And this certainly applies for public health. Yitang.
Thank you. So now I will present you a concrete case of Republic of China after 1949. It is a case in point. It illustrates that the International Fellowship Program was a crucial element for outsiders to become insiders at the international level. So through studying the long-term career path of Chinese public health workers, we discuss how public health workers change their status with respect to the scheme that we previously shared with you. As you might recall, in 1949, the Communist Party of China took control of the mainland and the Republic of China retreated to Taiwan. By that time, Chinese health officers who had been awarded international fellowship work for the national administration. We can consider them as the insider at the national level. Changes of the political situation and the defeat of Republican Chinese government had led important consequences as to their professional trajectories. As you can see over here, I listed three different trajectories. The first group of them were recruited by the UN organizations to work in Geneva. So they become the insiders at the international level. And the second group of them, they remained in mainland, and the third group of them who retreated to Taiwan with the Republican government. For the second and the third groups, they become insiders to the National Health Administration of the both sides of China. We shouldn't forget that we are talking about a tiny group of internationalized health officers. In the following 30 years, they show to be able to change and to adapt to national and international career path. Some of them who work for international organizations eventually return to the People's Republics of China several years later. On the other hand, those who moved to Taiwan in 1949 ended up working for the WHO. When we focus more on the case of Taiwan, it might be useful to recall that since 1950 already, the WHO officially collaborated with the ROC government. In this context, the former Rockefeller Fellows become WHO's favorite interlocutors to implement that organization's campaigns. So in this slide, I list two people, respectively the head of the WHO Tuberculosis and Malaria Program in Taiwan. I selected both of them because their initial training were distinct, yet their career path is really similar. As you can see on the right hand, Tao was trained at the Peking Union Medical School, and whereas Liang was trained at Taipei Imperial University, the cradle of medical doctors under the Japanese colonial regime in Formosa. After their graduation, they actually worked for the National Health Administration. With respect to our scheme, we could see them as insiders of the national administrations. However, we shouldn't forget that the national administration were intimately connected to and financed by international health organizations. Tao worked at the National Institute of Health, which was financed and designed by the League of Nations Health Organizations and the Rockefeller Foundation, whereas Liang was working at the Taiwan Malaria Research Institute, which was founded by the Rockefeller Foundation since 1946. Moreover, both Tao and Liang were selected to go on international fellowship program during their service in the above institute. The international fellowship, in their cases, the training at the Johns Hopkins, as you can see, I mark it in red, give them knowledge and diploma that were essential for becoming insiders at the international level. When they terminated their fellowship, they joined the elite of policymakers as directors of public health programs in Taiwan. At the same time, they interacted with the WHO by assisting conference and expert committees while publishing their programs in English written journals and the WHO publications. Lastly, their career's path changed again in the last 10 years after their fellowship. They started to working for the WHO. Tao became the WHO anti-tuberculosis expert since 1959, whereas Liang was recruited by the Pan-American Health Organization in 1957, and both of them stayed until 1980s after their retirement. A former public health staff at the National Taiwan University once wrote that the public health experts in Taiwan were aware of the importance of international fellowship programs. They reasoned that since the U.S. university alumni had formed a solid circle within the WHO, having a U.S. diploma is essential to pursue an international health career. The international fellowship program was an opportunity for them to go internationalize, which equals to get much better working conditions than being a local public health worker. So I wish to go back to the work of Tao and Liang in Taiwan to unveil a further group of insiders. To carry out WHO policies and programs, they need field workers. I cited, the next slide? I cited the numbers of workers involved in DDT spraying to demonstrate the skill of the program, as you can see here. You can see there are a lot of people that were involved. And the field worker might be viewed as insiders at the local level and outsiders to the national and international level. Of course, access to international careers were denied to these individuals. These field workers were trained in very specific techniques. As you can see the photo here, workers were trained to use DDT spraying equipment. It's really specific. The ROC government, the Republican China government in Taiwan, hired them on a short-term basis with contracts from 2 to 6 months. The first example was DDT spraying workers who were trained to manipulate spraying equipment across Taiwan. The anti-malaria program recruited more than 500 men over 18 years old in 1950s. The second example was the lay home visitor of the anti-tuberculosis program. As you can see, I listed some facts over here. Following gender stereotype, the Taipei Tuberculosis Control Center recruited middle school graduate unmarried women and trained them with social work and interview skills. They were in charge of knocking on every door, persuading people to take X-ray screening, handling over drugs to patients, calling patients for follow-up examination. The case of lay home visitors also sheds light on the fact that very few women became insiders at the national and international levels. Some rare exception were nursing experts. These field workers remain outsiders vis-a-vis national and international organizations. Only very few of them obtained the government's contract once the program terminated. In 1964, the Taiwanese parliament discussed several times about how to resolve the unemployment problem of DDT spraying workers after the island-wide DDT spraying had terminated. So, for the conclusion of our presentation, the Rockefeller International Fellowship Program was a decisive element granting the possibility to national administration of being involved with or even to change their career path to the international health organizations. The recipient of international fellowship programs obtained U.S. diploma, they became familiar with public health research, and they became fluent in English language. In a sense, we claim they become insiders of the international health system. At this stage of our research, it is still hard to be precise on the extent to which becoming insiders of one system, they become outsiders with respect to the national administration they had been working on. On the contrary, the group of public health field workers clearly were outsiders to both national and international administrations. Once the anti-epidemic programs terminated, they struggled with unemployment.